Okay, so with that, let me introduce Kelly Gill from Ithaca College, and she will be telling us about a flexible story, Playing with Surfaces.
Hi, how's my mic? Am I good? Yeah, great, thanks. First, I want to thank the organizers. It really is an honor to speak here at this conference and to share this story about the project that I had with Bill. Starting in 2010, we built a bunch of surfaces, and you can see a lot of them on display in the library across the way. So the reason we started working together, I think, is because we both really enjoyed making things and building things. So today I'm going to share this story and other stories I learned from Bill over the time that we worked together about projects he had with other people making things. I knew as a graduate student, as a graduate student at UCSB, my advisor was Daryl Cooper, and I arrived there, I'm not going to say when I arrived there, that'll age me. Anyways, you can't be a student in geometry and topology long before you learn about Thurston and Thurston's work. The graduate students there were reading Thurston's notes, and there's all this beautiful mathematics that Bill created. And yet, when I came here in 2010 and started sitting in on the seminar, somehow I didn't know all these other stories about all this time and energy he put in making things, and making things that he could share with non-mathematicians to explain mathematical ideas. So that's my goal today, is to share some of these. The first story I want to share with you, and anything that you see today, it's either going to be all Bill or joint with Bill, but nothing I'm going to show you, it wouldn't exist without Bill, Bill's influence. And that includes this title. I get a lot of comments on this title, and I want to say that for non-topologists, monkey pants is even funnier. Somehow to us, we're like, yeah, monkey pants, but they're like, what? And then I forget to tell them, and some of my pictures, the fourth hole is hidden, so they must be really confused. So I had a lot of fun going back through old files and emails that I had from Bill, and one of the files I found was this old text file, said something like title for bridges. So in 2011, Bill and I were advertised to give a talk at the Bridges Math Art Conference, and it was April, and Bridges says, well, we need a title from you guys. And Bill says, right, let's make a title. So how do you make a title if you're doing a project with Bill Thurston? Well, you sit down, he opens up a tech file, and he says, okay, start naming words. So we started naming words, and what I thought was interesting is, just to let you know, in the actual file, the small words were 9-point font, and the large words about 16. So as we started to like more words than others, the ones we didn't like became smaller, and the ones that we liked became bigger. And somehow, I don't know who contributed what, but I can tell you 100% it was joint, because he demanded that. When we needed names for things, he's like, right, name things, and I'm not gonna, you have to. Tell me what you think. So I feel like playing with surfaces might have actually come from me, because he was, demanding things. I definitely know that some things I'm like, that's too fancy. I think he liked curving the imagination, and I'm like, I don't know. So we ended up with this, and I think it was the right choice. Another thing that I learned from Bill, and I don't know why I'm surprised by these things, but is that he had a long history of making things with people. So these are pictures from the 1989 Geometry and the Imagination workshop that was held in Minnesota. And this here is Margaret Thurston. We're very honored to have Margaret Thurston here with us today in the front row. And I got to hear stories from her about these projects. So this has to be the first mathematical sewing class that ever existed. So some things that I've learned from Bill is that if you want to make a hyperbolic plane, you want a low angle defect, or things get crazy. So one that works particularly well is 120-degree heptagons. Your angle defect's only about 25 degrees, and you're able to build more before things get out of control and see what happens. Some other things, something about mathematical constructions. They really invite people to put them on their head. You have to wear them. I saw someone's small children, they ran into the library and they immediately picked up something and they're like, this goes here. I don't know why. It is universal though. You go to the Bridges Conference and that's what you see. So one thing that you see here, and I think by here I mean this, I think that white paper is this. We can ask other people here today. I also want to say, like, these are all stories I learned from Bill, and I'm sure they're going to be incomplete and some things might be wrong because my memory is not, you know, 100%, maybe not great. So if anyone here wants to correct me or add details, please do, especially if I get something wrong. So here we have at the same workshop. So Margaret tells me they recruited her to join this workshop. So Bill told me that his mother was an expert seamstress, and she told me today that she started sewing when she was 10. So a lot of these projects really do require quite a bit of skill to do, like technical skill to be able to create these things. So here's a picture. What they're making now, this was, I think, probably the first physical cloth model of a Klein Cortic ever made. So that's what they're working on. So here's a picture with Conway and Margaret Thurston working on the Klein Cortic. Tony Phillips, Margaret Thurston, and the Klein Cortic still there. Here we see Bill has joined the picture to discuss the Klein Cortic. And just so I don't leave you, I didn't have an actual picture of the finished version from this workshop, but Dylan Thurston has since created one. Margaret says she saved her patterns. She never throws out her patterns. She still has them, which is good. Because as you can, you can't really see it very well here, but the pattern is right here, and it is complicated. What is it, 24 heptagons in the, so there are a lot of them. So what I hope these pictures illustrate is that you do need technical skill, but also mathematical knowledge is really useful when you're making these things as well. So I saw these pictures, and being a mathematician, lacking skill or knowledge never stopped me from attempting anything. So I was like, I want to make one of these. And they're like, no, this isn't a beginner sewing project, Kelly. You really should start with making a torus that illustrates you need 7 colors for any mapping. So we're all probably familiar with the 4-color theorem for the plane. And for any map that you draw on the torus, you need 7 colors to make sure no neighborhood is colored the same. So there's your torus. And here's the pattern for the torus. You get a nice one if you use 7 hexagons. That'll work. So I talked to Bill about like how I would do this, and he's like, you know, I showed him my pattern. He's like, well, I think to get a good torus, you really want the longitude to be 3 times as long as the meridian. That'll give you a nice looking torus. That's what a torus should look like. We're all happy when those are the dimensions. And I said, okay, great. So when you sew things, of course, the seams are on the inside. So you very carefully, and I'm in my defense, for this story, I don't know why I tell embarrassing stories about myself, but I do. Keep in mind, this is my first sewing project. I'm learning how to use a sewing machine as I'm doing this, right? So I'm sewing on my torus. I sew everything up very carefully inside out, and I leave a little hole, and at the very last stage, I go to turn the thing inside out, and that is when I learned, somebody's laughing, right? That is when I learned when you turn a torus inside out, the meridian and longitude switch places. So I promise you, if I ever need that in a theorem, I'm going to have that. That's there. So then I thought, this is awesome. So then I made a square torus that was striped that illustrated this fact, and then I just sat there and played with it and turned it inside and out. You can't read the quote. I don't know what's going on with my... I think you can probably fill in the gaps. You guys are smart. Figure out what that is. So this is a quote from the introduction that Bill wrote to that appeared in the Eightfold Way. So this beautiful, many of you have probably seen this sculpture at MSRI, but I didn't know that it was installed in 1993 when Bill had been director at MSRI for about a year. And the story he told me that was he told Ferguson about the Klein Cortic and some of the beautiful properties that the Klein Cortic has. And so that was installed while he was director. I think it'll be all right. It has to do with the screen size. Most of them won't matter. So my story with Bill began in 2010. I was a student in his, I was sitting in on a seminar class. I was visiting Cornell for the semester, and in February, he says, well, I'm not going to be here for a week in March because I'm going to be at Paris Fashion Week. And we're like, what? what are you talking about? And being the person I am, I mean, like, immediately, like, after class, I was, like, on my computer, like, seeing who was on, I'm like, oh my gosh, Bill's gonna be at Paris Fashion Week. This is awesome. So it turned out, he told us this story. He'd been collaborating with Dai Fujiwara of Issey Miyake. Dai was a fashion designer who had an engineering background and had read a story about Thurston and his eight geometries of three manifolds and thought this would make a great inspiration for Issey Miyake's 2010 Spring Ready to Wear line. So I'm sure many of us in this room looked, and I know many of you are familiar with these stories, but just in case you're not, it's too good not to be told. So I'm sure I looked at these and you're like, how are these the geometries? Like, what, you know, we're wondering, maybe, I don't know, spherical, Euclidean, not sure. One of them definitely looks Euclidean. There, okay, we get it. They're really, I think they're really connected. So there's a picture of them. That jacket was awesome. He wore it for about 3 weeks after he came back to the seminar. And like you're just like, this is a one of, it was an amazingly beautiful jacket. It was like a one-of-a-kind jacket. And he's lecturing, of course, there's chalk everywhere. All over the jacket, and you're just like, oh. So what was the connection? And here's the connection. Bill sent Dai tons of stuff. I love this. I've given this talk a bunch of times, and I get to skip all the what is a manifold slides that are usually in here. It's wonderful. So one of the things that Bill sent, well, first he sent tons of ideas to Dai, and he confessed to me, he's like, I think I might have overwhelmed them. So yeah. But one of the things he sent, these are actually images drawn by Bill. He liked the shading. He did them in, he used Adobe Illustrator to draw his pictures, and I think he liked how these turned out. So what are these? Each of these is a link in S3. They're each a singular set in S3. So, and they all have order 2, and that's the kind of poetic part, I think, that you can, I didn't know that you could do this actually, create a representative of a 3-orb fold. Okay, let me start over. Okay. What are each of these pictures? They each represent a 3-dimensional orb fold. The singular set inside is the length that's given. I think they're all lengths. Is there any knots up there? Yeah, the 5-3, that one's a knot. And the singular set has an order 2. And they all live inside of S3. And so each one of these represents, is a representative from the particular geometry class that's shown here. And just for fun, because, you know, I'm not going to say, if you're bored, you can try and work out why the other ones are what they are. But this is a wonderful picture from Bill's notes on 3-manifolds of how you get the Borromean link as an orbifold, as a Euclidean orbifold with singular set 2. So I'm sure most of us have stared at this picture at some point. Right. So that was one of the that was one of the things that Bill sent Dai Fujiwara was all of these links, and the designers, they loved the links. They grabbed those, and they became an integral part of the fashion line. And there we can see some of them, and just because it's a really good picture, these scarves look gorgeous. There's the Euclidean 3-orbifold. So I think this one's Euclidean. I tried to guess. I had them all written down, and now my slides aren't showing right, so I can't. I counted the components. And Dylan tells me, actually, they got some of the links wrong. Maybe they weren't all right, so maybe what I was trying to do was futile, but there they are. And there are Bill's words. I think he, I know he had a really great time in Paris and enjoyed the experience and thought it was good for mathematics. After Bill came back, so of course this was big news at the Cornell campus, and Fashion Technology heard that Dai Fujiwara had been on campus and hadn't come to the fashion department. They were like, oh, so they were nervous. So the first thing we had this great, so Bill had been starting to build these assemblages after he was thinking about clothing design after going to this. And he'd bring these assemblages into class. I think I have some of them over in the workshop. This is when I really was impressed with Bill's crafting skills, because I have spent a lot of time in my life building things. Like for my classes, the sort of thing that I would do is I would very carefully build paper models of various genus surfaces up to genus 3 for my classes to do Euler characteristic experiments, and it takes forever. And I would very carefully tape things up, and they would be sort of sad, and they'd last a semester and fall apart. And so these assemblages, Bill, I think, had this idea about, like, oh, I want to make some assemblages, and he'd have this idea on Tuesday. And by Thursday, he'd bought a laminator and a paper cutter and a riveter and has a whole workshop going. And these things are really permanent, and 4 years later, still work pretty well. And I was like, wow, I think too small. You know, like, so it was very impressive. So anyways, these are harder than they look, these assemblages. You can get them to fit any figure, but local changes in angle measure can drastically change the global geometry. So you fix something in one place, and all of a sudden you have to fix it everywhere. And it was actually much more challenging than it might look. He also had pieces. Harry, who just graduated, or just finished his PhD, I think, last Friday, is wearing one of, he had little, you can measure the curvature of your head with these circular pieces that he had. And I just loved the bear. So here are some assemblages. One question that you could ask is, so the orange one, if you're looking at, what's the space of flat configurations? Some of them aren't flat at all, but there's at least a one parameter family, I think, of flat configurations. Like, what's the dimension of that? This was another thing. And so this puzzle is kind of important, because this is actually, is this your puzzle, Liam?
Yeah.
That's the one you were talking about, right? The foam puzzle. So this puzzle might have been the start of it. It was a wonderfully meditative puzzle. It's a one-piece puzzle. So it's this piece of foam, and you can't find these. I've looked. You can't buy them anymore. And it's got one really complicated, like, Jordan curve on it. And once you start it, you just keep going. And you put this puzzle together, and it's very meditative. And so I had this idea. What's coming next? Oh, right. So I didn't know at this time that Bill had this history of mathematical sewing projects. But I was very excited by the workshop, the fashion workshop, and I was interested in the stuff we were talking about in class. And, I had this idea, like, wouldn't it be interesting? I wanted to make a dress. And I was wondering if it would be possible to make it with just one pattern piece. But it had to fit well and look good. If you imagine you have, like, this really complicated curve, and because the reason our clothing fits us now is pretty pretty obvious. Like, a lot of times the seams go along the sides of our clothing because of the symmetry of a human body, right? So it's very obvious why things fit and where the curvature is. But what if you had one piece with an incredibly complicated curve that hid all of the curvature and the reason why clothing was fitting? It would be sort of this magical dress. But of course, could you do this? Would it develop? And this question of developing is hard. Like, it might not. It depends upon how much negative curvature you have, maybe. So that was the question. So, of course, before you start with something that complicated, you start with an easier question. Like, what if you just wanted to make clothing for a sphere? And to make the problem harder, we're going to use something rigid, like paper. We're going to make paper clothing out of a sphere. How could you do it? Well, if you had a monosphere, you might just say, well, an octahedron could dress a sphere. It just wouldn't fit very well. It's bag-like clothing. It's fine. It's dressed. What's the point here? So a sphere, everyone here, I think, well, not everyone, but a lot of us have probably heard of the Gauss-Bonnet theorem, right? So what's the total curvature in a sphere? The Euler characteristics, too, we have 4 pi's worth of positive curvature for a sphere. So the combinatorial Gauss-Bonnet theorem tells us that curvature is concentrated entirely at the vertex, right? So what's the missing angle at a vertex? 2 pi over 3. If we have an octahedral sphere, 8 times 2 pi over 3, I hope, is 4 pi. So all the curvature is concentrated at the vertices. So to get a smoother, a better fitting dress for your sphere, the first thing you do is push the curvature out of the vertices into the seams. And you do that by replacing the triangle edges with circle arcs that will give you right-angled triangles. So I think the circle arcs here is 5 or 6. I think that's the right thing. I shouldn't say things out loud. I shouldn't even make guesses to that because this is being videotaped. Anyways, you make right angle spheres and you tape that up. And this is what you get. So we taped it up and we both went, oh, that's not very round. That's not really what we were going for. And so I think actually Bill was surprised by this because he said that with you, Margaret, they'd made similar things. And with cloth, because cloth isn't rigid, you get really good spheres with patterns like these. But with paper, they're not very satisfying. So I looked at it and I said, well, clearly, Bill, we need to make the seams go like this. So I said, make the seams go like this, and I made this motion with my finger. Oh, you're gonna fix it.
Yes.
Maybe. Display. Oh no, go back, display. Oh yeah, yeah, one of those. Do a different one of those. No, the 1024 by 768, or just pick one. Try a different one. This is gonna mess up my mathematics notebooks, Dylan. It's gonna be a disaster. Yes.
That is a Rouleau triangle that you have just constructed.
A what triangle?
A Rouleau triangle.
I don't know what a Rouleau triangle is.
Constant width?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a circle arc. So, I mean, it's just a triangle and the edges have been replaced with arcs of circles. Okay. So anyways, I said, you know, we got to make the seam go like that. And I swear it's about 45 minutes later, I'm taping together this. This was incredibly round and satisfying. And I know if 45 minutes might be a slight exaggeration, but I know that the fat triangle and that guy were taped together in the same afternoon completely. And they take a long time to tape. So what happened? How did Bill make that? This is the answer. So the trick was we need a long meandering curve that's going to cover a greater portion of the area of the sphere, but has the same amount of planar curvature as the circle arc. So we want a process to, one, make a meandering curve, and to, two, bend the curve the right amount. So how did Bill think about curves? He thought about the angle function. He thought about the angle of the tangent vector. So first thing, define what your angle function should be. And if you're curious, and I think you can see this, it's not really that important. There's the angle function, pi times 9/16 cosine x minus 1/9 cosine 3x. So we all talk about levels of understanding things. I think after meeting Bill, I think my understanding of sine and cosine and composition of functions, I think I'm about a 2. And I think he's about a 50 or something. Because, you know, we all know that you can get anything, but. So what's going on? So here's my angle function. So this red arrow here just represents the tangent vector for the red point that's traveling around the curve. So how did he make the long meandering curve? He just thought about, well, what direction do I want my curve to happen? And then you just make a unit vector field to go along with that angle function and then integrate. You do nd solve in Mathematica, and then you have your nice curve. And that's what happens. And you can see here, so what are some properties about the planar curvature? Well, clearly, you know, so what is the curvature? The curvature is the rate of change of that tangent vector. And you can see as it swings, that's where we get the peaks and the valleys. Oh, so my curvature I want to think of as sine curvature. Whether I'm turning clockwise or counterclockwise, one's positive, one's negative. So some things to point out here that you notice about the curve. My claim is that this curve has total curvature 0. And it seems pretty obvious when it gets done drawing the picture. Maybe I can, this is tricky, it's not, pause. I should have slowed it down. Anyways, let's draw it out. But the way to see that it has, I love this. This is a great talk for like undergrads because it just uses calculus and the fundamental theorem of calculus. So you take your starting vector and your ending vector and you see they're the same. So as long as your angle function starts and ends at the same place, total curvature is 0. So beautiful. Just pick something periodic that does what you want, and you have it. So now, how do you bend? Any guesses? It's like one thing to do. You just add a linear function to your angle. I mean, it doesn't have to be linear, but I liked the linear ones best. So here it is. You just add a linear function and, okay, slower. So now you can see that the total curvature of this curve, you take your start vector and your end vector, and you take the difference, and that's going to be your total curvature. So it's very easy. You just take the linear function that's going to give you total curvature pi over 6. Okay. So we're done with you now. Vamos. Oh, no. Got to go this way? Yeah. Okay. So, and here you can see that if you want more bend, you just change your linear function and you can get more bending. And you can see the bending in the spreading of the fingers. So here's a very good pattern. I think this is like version 2 of the sphere. It got good really quickly. And I learned how to tape on the inside so the finished product looks a little bit better. I can do about like 90 to 95% taping on the inside. And I have to say, it's so incredibly satisfying to tape one of these up because they start flat with the fingers spread, and all you have to do is, you have no choice. Like, you start to tape it up and you align the seams, and it beautifully curves into a sphere. And it was so good that I think I had trouble explaining to people what was going on, so I wanted this intermediate version made so you could sort of see the shorter curves. And you could see more of the octahedron, and it only curved less. Of course, there's nothing special about the octahedron. You could do this with any platonic solid. Here's a tetrahedron. You only have three triangles meeting at a vertex, so to get right-angled triangles, you need more circle arcs, more bending. So ATNG's just... I just learned about this morning. Jesus told me about this. And I haven't read this yet. I've only looked at the pictures. But people have been asking me, like, did you guys talk to Adidas? And I'm like, no, I had no idea. So I know in 2010, when the World Cup ball came out, Bill sent me a picture and said, Kelly, did you see this? This kind of looks like our stuff. But I thought this was very interesting. So it has a practical application, I guess. Maybe. I didn't tell you how. Okay, so maybe I want to tell you a little bit more about how this cutter works. So the cutter works like old printers used to work. Like you have, you really just put this piece of paper down on like this tacky plastic sort of stuff that you feed into this machine, and it has a little tiny knife. All right, so the pieces were all designed in Mathematica. Mathematica, it's really easy to take a PDF from Mathematica and put it in, say, Adobe Illustrator. Adobe Illustrator, when you used to be able to buy it, and now you can't, but Adobe Illustrator has a plugin that is compatible with the cutter, and it feeds the instructions from your PDF to the cutter, and it, you know, runs around, and it comes out, and then you have your piece. That sounds way easier than it actually is. It's rather fussy. The knives get dull. Sometimes it has to go around twice to get good cuts. It's hard to peel the pieces off without bending them. So I can't stress enough that making things really takes a lot of time. I think to tape up a whole sphere like this well, I mean, it's probably at least 2 hours. I got faster, but the first time it was about that long. So anyways, this is what comes out of the machine. You have this thing cut out. And so then you take out your piece, and that's what's left. And then Bill looks at it, and he's like, oh, of course, we have the curves right there for negative curvature. So he just goes over to his Adobe Illustrator. If you just look at it from the other side, the fingers are going in. So that's, you're going to be able to have models of hyperbolic planes and things. So you get really nice, smooth models of the hyperbolic plane. I think this is, yeah, this is, these are 120 heptagons. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yeah, 120-degree heptagons. And this is actually the picture I have of the monkey pants. And you can see it's a great picture, but you can't see the fourth hole. So we had negative curvature pieces, positive curvature pieces. And I said, well, I want to build anything, so we need mixed curvature. How do we make that happen? And of course, that can be done. But before we do that, I think I want to do an experiment. I tried this experiment at lunch, and I want to try it now. So this is audience participation here. OK. So imagine you're going to have a closed, smooth surface in R3. And if you don't know what one of those is, just think of maybe, say, a human body or the surface of anything, like the surface of a torus. And you want to pick colors. And you want points of positive curvature, like a shoulder, to be one color, and points of negative curvature to be a different color. So everybody right now, don't say it out loud. Pick a color for positive curvature. Okay, everybody have their color? You want things like shoulders to be a certain color. Okay, now close your eyes. Okay, you're much better than my students. Raise your hand if you picked red for positive curvature. Okay, look around. Right? Okay, I don't know why this is, but like one of the things, Bill, we were always, you know, he was very concerned about, like, well, what color should this be? And, you know, so when you make the matching four per vertex system, wait, for somebody who didn't pick red, what color did you pick? Pink is red. Pink is the same as red. But blue's the exact opposite. How many people pick blue? Just curious. Oh my gosh, that was more than I thought. I think reds win, but wow. You picked blue?
I picked sky blue.
You picked sky blue, that's blue. Yeah. That's just like pink and red. Okay, so what's the trick to matching pieces that are compatible? The only trick is you need the curves to be the same length, and that's easy to get when you're just defining things with angle functions and parameterized by arc length. You just bend by different things. So what's neat is if you tape two red triangles together, you get positive curvature bending. It's like the sum of the two seams. If you tape red to yellow here, yellow has no bending, so you get less positive curvature bending. If you tape red to blue, you get just a little bit of bending because a pentagon has five sides, so there's less negative curvature per side than positive curvature per side. So there it is. Notice that the total curvature that a triangle contributes is equal to the total negative curvature that a pentagon contributes. So we started making things. At some point, we moved to foam because paper was really not forgiving. To tape up the paper, you use just regular, like, actually, I'm kind of picky about my tape. I don't like Scotch tape because it's cloudy. I have to find that really thin, clear, transparent tape, which is actually kind of hard to find. So at some point along the way, we moved to foam. Bill had bought a bigger cutter, and I had come in with this really, you buy this really thin foam at craft stores, and he had figured out it's not, these cutters aren't made to cut foam, but they will if you force it. So the pieces evolved, and I would build things like Archimedean solids, and Bill would build faces that were pretty awesome. But you know, I really wanted to build a torus, and building a torus was actually surprisingly hard. Oh, I never finished my story why foam was better than paper. So with paper, you think something's going to work, and you spend hours taping up this pattern. And then it doesn't work. It just, the geometry, you're like, oh, that's not going to work. And then there's nothing you can do but throw it out and start over. And with the foam, if you used artist tape, you could at least, like, just go back to a certain point in time and reconstruct. Because the artist tape would come off, whereas the clear tape, you're just done. So some of the problems with constructing a torus, why is it hard? So this torus was made with a four per vertex system. So it was just like the slide that I just showed not too long ago. So any smooth surface in R3 has at least 4π's worth of positive curvature. And these aren't technically smooth, I guess along the seam. They're not smooth, but they're really good approximations. So they sort of behave like smooth surfaces. So each triangle contributes pi over 2's worth of positive curvature. So if I want to make a torus, I need to use at least 8 triangles. And of course, a torus has total curvature 0, so for every triangle I use, I have to use a pentagon. So the absolute smallest torus I could make would have at least 8 pentagons and 8 triangles. The smallest number I was able to construct is this sort of star torus here, and I really feel like it's cheating because it's actually under stress. So you have this area problem where, because the area of a pentagon, if you have equal side lengths, the area of a pentagon is much bigger. So you want your negative curvature bit to have less area, and that's just not going to happen with these pieces. To try and get a better torus, this is a 3 per vertex system that Bill made. That was hanging from a tree in his backyard. He found there was this great branch on the tree where things would get photographed because they looked good. So the 3 per vertex system, you can see that torus is much round, but it has a lot of pieces in it. Like, that took a very long time to build. So there's another version of monkey pants. At some point, I think a lot of people in this room probably got kits of these. We were trying to, Bill very much wanted these to be developed into a toy. He imagined, you know, kids running around with hyperbolic crowns on. So these were very similar to the beta version that we sent to a bunch of people. Oh, you can't see that when I do it with a mouse. So what are these medallion things like? Well, one, they're just pretty. But another thing is, to add more genus quickly, the idea was that you could add these circles and then attach them to one another and increase the genus in an easy way. So as a result of the beta testing, we discovered that they were just a bit too fussy. For these pieces that, at some point they got the name zippergons, I think we call them, because it looks like they zip up. If you had 2 negative curvature pieces, they'll sort of stay together. There's a very weak gripping. But because of the nature of the positive curvature, the fingers spread. And the triangle to triangle, they just wouldn't stay together. And even triangle to pentagon, they just kind of fall apart. So we were interested in developing, and particularly Bill was interested in developing, a no-tape system. And he got kind of discouraged, but then he had this ingenious puzzle-like design. And this is just a feat of engineering. I can't tell you, this foam is incredibly flimsy. But yet, these seams, they're not as easy as they look. You know, and I know some of you have been playing with them a little bit. You kind of have to put them in there, and then after you put it together, you have to massage them in place. But some of the seams that he came up with were quite good. I mean, they'll stay together. And for instance, you guys can't see. Some of the things, like these Archimedean solids, they'll stay together with like light tossing. You know, you can toss them around a little bit and they won't fall apart. So then we just started playing more. The double pieces got designed. I was really bothered by the fact that we hadn't built what I thought was a good torus. So one thing you could do is you can make triangles that were twice as big and have half the bending per side. So they bend slower and they fit together. And then we started to get some really good tori. And these are also just bigger. Those are hexagonal pieces. And same principle, the lengths of these pieces. This is a really nice torus. I unfortunately don't have this one anymore, and I had trouble recutting them. But these are great. The top seam is the bending along the top seam, which is twice as long, is equal to the negative bending on the inside. So you got really nice round torus. The soccer ball is interesting. These brown pieces don't have equal bending on each side. Because you have brown-to-bound seams, it was made to be totally smooth. This isn't really a compatible set of pieces. You just had a soccer ball. My favorite, which I was wearing here today, these are really fun, these aliens. It's a great way to make a high-genus surface, right? You start with a 5-punctured sphere. You can attach them to each other, attach them up, make lots of different things. There's a really nice genus 2 surface that was constructed. And any questions thus far? I think I'm going to be done early, but I think that's okay. So not to be outdone by Benson Favre, which I know is a sentence that's really terrifying to utter. You know, he had this great last slide about Bill's foresight into the future of mathematics. And I just wanted to point out that that wasn't really limited to mathematics. So this I found in one of my emails, and I was really surprised to find this because I didn't remember it. And I think what happened was I saw that and I'm like, I don't know if I see earrings there. And I was accused of not thinking big enough at many times. I'm like, I don't know if I see earrings, which is kind of funny because these earrings that I'm wearing today, and I just talked to Henry and he said he designed these in 2012. And I think it's the exact same picture that was made of foam. And these were 3D printed out of metal, out of silver. So Bill was also right about the direction of mathematical surfaces and constructions as well. So thanks for your attention. I don't know. For me, when I looked at it, I mean, it was exactly like I just said. I said, Bill, make it go like that. And then he did. I don't know what he was. I mean, it happened very quickly. So I don't know if he was thinking fingers or what. But that was the first curve that came up.
You said one of the goals for this was to introduce ideas for, like, do you have reactions of, like, non-mathematicians to these gadgets beyond putting them in?
Yeah, they like them in general. So I've taken them to, so there's this, I don't know if that counts as non-mathematicians, but there's this Bridges Math Art Conference, which is actually, I think, a beautiful community. And it really is, mathematicians go there, artists go there, computer science go there, crafters go there. And they're definitely, I thought it was going to be mainly people like me, like mathematicians with a crafting hobby, but that's not the case. There are actual artists, and they were very positively received there. They were. I forgot to. This guy is really pretty. So this is a one-finger model in terms of a multi-finger model. So I think originally we both thought, which is now surprising to me, that the number of fingers mattered. Like more fingers would be better, but like no, it doesn't matter. You can actually get really good results as long as your curve covers a large portion of the area. That's the only important thing. So this is actually, it looks cube-like, but it's actually an octahedral model. But what happened was a lot of area got concentrated at the vertices, so it smushed out to the dual, which, you know, I think this one was the one where, like, oh yeah, of course, it's not the number of fingers, it's just where the curve goes relative to sphere. So that was an interesting sort of mistake that looks kind of cool. In this one that I just held up, this is eight. It's eight triangles. It's the what?
What do the minimal number of?
You can definitely actually four. You can do a tetrahedron. I mean, you could do actually one. There's like you can do one with a sphere really easily. You could just think of it like a flower. Like actually, just peel an orange. Peel an orange, and then you have. Have nice. In fact, I think I. Hang on a sec. Oh, I keep losing my arrow. This is okay, though, because I didn't take up all my time. Ah, there it is. Slide. Don't skip slide. Play. There you go. Just peel an orange and. you know, you can do spheres with one piece for sure. In fact, as we were working on this project, I find this really interesting. I'm afraid to mention it because you might ask me questions about it, and I don't fully understand it, but I'm going to anyways in the spirit of sharing ideas. So there's this question, like, which I think is a really good question. What's the minimal number of Euclidean patches you need to build a particular surface? So it's not too hard to imagine one patch tori, but then you have this quote, what about a hyperbolic surface? What about a closed hyperbolic surface that you want to well approximate with one Euclidean patch? How many patches would you need? And so one of the things that Thurston talked about in his seminar was he reckoned you could do it with one, which is kind of surprising, and that's what these triangles are about. So if you have more questions about that, I'd be happy to discuss it with you, not in front of everybody. Because it's kind of cool, but I don't fully understand.
Yeah. Another kind of construction is origami. It's been influenced enormously in the last couple of decades by differential geometry and so forth. Have you explored at all the connections between what you're doing here and origami?
I haven't, no. I know Bill did. So some of the things hanging up in... He was asking about origami, and have I explored any of the origami connections between this and origami? And like, no is the answer. But around the time we were working on this, Bill was asked to review the video Between the Folds. Is that the Domain Brothers? Does anybody know? Anyways, he used the cutter to score paper and make interesting figures that are their folded paper and illustrate, you know, starting with flat pieces and scoring in proper ways so that when you sort of just barely fold them, they're negatively curved. And it's interesting, and you can see them over in the library. And one of them's hanging down. That was another thing he made.
Are there any more questions for Kelly? Okay, let's thank Kelly again.